and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Welcome back to Counsel for the State. This is episode 14 of our podcast, and today we'll be visiting with members of the office's Consumer Protection Division. The frontline staff in the Consumer Protection Division, people who communicate directly with constituents needing consumer protection assistance, do some of the division's most important and visible work. They're not attorneys, but rather specialists who must be well-versed in many things like fraud, the latest scams, motor vehicle issues, as well as landlord and tenant matters. So let's welcome in our guest today. Lee Post is a veteran of the Consumer Protection Division, and you may recognize Lee from some recent news coverage because of a very unusual situation she recently found herself in. Lee, welcome to Counsel for the State.
Oh, good morning.
And we're also joined by Rochelle Litow, a consumer specialist in the Consumer Protection Division. Rochelle, am I saying your last name? Why don't we go ahead and slide that up?
You are. That was perfect.
Okay. Rochelle, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And Brett DeLange is the chief of the Consumer Protection Division. He oversees the outreach that is done in this particular part of the AG's office. And Brett has been a past guest here on Counsel for the State. Brett, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And once again, we're joined by co-host Brian Kane, Office of the Attorney General Assistant Chief Deputy. As always, Brian, thanks for being back.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Lee, let's start our conversation with you. So it was several weeks ago. You were headed into work on a weekday morning, and you decided to stop by an Albertsons store on your way into the office. Mm-hmm. I believe you said you were buying donuts or something fun. Take it from there. What happened when you were inside the walls of that particular store?
Well, I was standing in line, and there was a lady in front of me that had some cards, like iTunes cards, and she also had her telephone in her other hand. And I saw a red flag there. So she asked the clerk for $3,000 on her iTunes cards. And I said to her, I said, "Ma'am, this is a scam." I said, "Do you have people on the telephone guiding you through this process?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Can I talk to them?" And so I just told them who I was, and I told them that it was a scam and not to ever call this woman back. And she left saying, "Thank you," because she just saved the $3,000.
So there's probably a few red flags there. What were the things that you saw that tipped you off that something was out of the ordinary?
She was nervous. She had in one hand her cards and the other hand her telephone. And that's how the scammers work. They make you go to the grocery store and you talk to them the whole way.
So how did you have a conversation with her about what was the genesis of this? How did this conversation start? Do you know the background of this particular scam?
No, I do not.
So if that means we sort of have to hypothesize, but based on what you know about these scams, how might have that situation been started?
She probably got a call from Social Security, IRS, Publisher Clearinghouse. They told her to go to the grocery store and get iTunes cards. And then once she got the iTunes cards, she would have called back the numbers on the back of the cards.
And somebody actually could end up with three. Now, do they have to spend that, do you know, on iTunes stuff, or can they redeem that for other?
I would assume that they can redeem it for other.
Brett, do you have input on that?
They take the numbers off the cards, and then they monetize it, and just it's $3,000 to them. They're not going to have a really good iTunes directory. They're going to take that money.
You could do a lot with $3,000. So, Lee, I'm curious, do you feel like if you were not in that situation, what the outcome might have been? Do you have an idea?
She would have lost $3,000.
I think so. So one of the things that you and I have discussed in the past is that there's there is training that retailers in Idaho and beyond are doing with their frontline staff in a
right.
situation like that, banks, stores, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Do you, based on your experience in working with people who are sometimes scammed and hearing from them after the fact, how do you think those companies are doing in making this a priority for their people?
I think that they're doing an excellent job because the clerk called her manager and the manager would not have let that run through.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's good.
So, and all the stores are doing that right now, and so are the banks.
Brett, is that something that we've seen ramp up in recent years? Is one more line of defense against these scammers? Is banks and other stores stepping up and training their frontline staff?
I think so. This is an instance where we all have to be looking out for each other. Sometimes it's our parents or our siblings or our children, but sometimes it's just the people in the store. And, you know, businesses deserve some credit for training their staff to be on the lookout for these sorts of things. There's more that we can do. It's not like we'll ever have reached, you know, the perfect spot in terms of training. And so it's a focus that continues to need to be made. These crooks are not going to go away. There's enough instances where they can, steal that money from a person that they are going to keep doing it. It's incredibly lucrative for them. So it's the sort of thing where we can't ever let our guard down.
So that you oversee Lee and Rochelle and the other consumer specialists and the work that they do, and like we said, this is very important work. It's high profile because it's dealing directly with constituents who have questions or who are having problems in the consumer protection realm. As a division chief who supervises Lee's work, tell me how it made you feel when you heard that story that Lee said that she was able to, you know, just on her way to work, help somebody save $3,000.
Well, I was pretty proud, and I thought, well, that's just Lee. in one sense, it was not surprising because that's how I think our Lee and that's how our specialists operate anyways. They're blessed that they maybe have a little bit more knowledge than some of us because they deal with this every day. But it takes a little bit of courage to step out of your comfort zone, if you will, to talk to a stranger or someone and say, I think something's not quite right here. You know, I think you might be getting scammed. That takes a little bit of, you know, a little bit of courage to broach that with a person. And, when Lee came in and told me about it, I thought, this is something that does honor on the office and is something that's good. We should get the word out because maybe it'll encourage a few other people to do the same thing.
So Lee obviously has knowledge in this area that average folks may not, but would you recommend that if one of our listeners or just an average constituent in the state of Idaho who is aware of this type of scam and type of fraud, that they step in and help their fellow Idahoan in a situation like that?
I think so. Some of this is just common sense. You don't need to know the intricacies about a fraud, but if someone is trying to buy $3,000 on an app on an iTunes card, to me that's a red flag. That's not how the government rolls. For example, if the IRS really wants you to pay for some back taxes, they're not going to tell you to put it on iTunes cards. That's not how utilities roll. And that's the first, so these sort of things, when it's a little bit, it just needs, if it hits our common sense button, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, there are zero companies out there that are accepting late payments and gift cards.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, one of the issues that comes out of this is kind of the fact that we're humans. And so the biggest part of these scams are they exploit our human vulnerabilities. And just as, Lee saw someone in distress and wanted to help them, which is a very human reaction, these scammers are relying on our need to help folks that are perceived to be in distress. And they're really basing the scam around what social psychologists call the truth bias. And we have a tendency to believe what other folks tell us. And our reliance and our tendency to believe what other folks tell us, it probably originates a little bit in the story of the Good Samaritan. but that is what they're exploiting. And so when somebody calls up and says, hey, this person is in trouble and the only way to get them out of trouble is with $3,000 in iTunes gift cards, we immediately think, oh my goodness, I have to do that to get this person out of trouble. And the scam is completely built around our human tendencies. And that's why, as Brett says, they're not going away, right? Because as long as we're humans and we have these tendencies, that's going to be part of the equation. And so our best defense is to say, we don't necessarily believe everything that comes at us, especially when it's an out-of-the-blue phone call.
Well, and if they're getting dollars like $3,000, you don't have to hit on that many, you know, people who pick up the phone to make a pretty good day's work, air quotes around work, to make it worth their time. So that number surprised me. Rochelle, when you talk to folks who are maybe calling in about a scam that they're maybe asking about or reporting a scam, how consistent are they in this sort of urgency, this sense of urgency? Is that a part of every scam? You know, you missed jury duty or you missed your power bill or something like that.
Yeah, there are some tricks that scammers use across different scamming methods, whether it's an IRS scam or a family emergency scam or you've won $1 million. There are, we call them six signs of a scam. A colleague in a neighboring state turned me on to how she thinks of them. And one of them is that, you know, you want to help out people. And when we go out into the public and we do presentations for community groups, we often tell them, use the old cliche, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But we also ask them to reverse that. And if it sounds too bad to be true, it probably is as well. You know, the police aren't coming to your door to arrest you. You know, your social security number isn't going to be frozen. That sort of thing. Another thing that they do on a regular basis is they try to tell their victim or their potential victim to keep it a secret. Mm-hmm. They don't want them to share what's going on, because if they share it with somebody, whether it's a friend or a family member, you know,
somebody's going to say that's a scam.
Exactly, exactly. So they try to get you to keep it a secret. Mm-hmm. They're often asking for money, whether it's gift cards is a big thing now, because once that money is gone, once they read those numbers off the back of the card, they will take it and your money's gone and you're probably not going to get it back.
So when you pick up the phone and somebody's talking about a scam, I've been contacted by, or maybe it's a family member, can we say specifically that there is a targeted demographic or a more vulnerable demographic, or does this run the gamut?
It runs the gamut. I mean, they are targeting everybody, and everybody can become a victim. The FTC recently released their year-end numbers for 2019, and
Federal Trade Commission,
and they keep track of the fraud statistics for every state. And in 2019, young people reported losing money to fraud more often than older people.
Interesting.
Now, that said, when older people reported losing money, it was substantially more than what the younger people were losing. Okay. And those are just what has been reported. That isn't all that's been lost.
And Brett, one thing we've talked about before is that we might only hear a certain percentage of the actual successful scams, because there's a level of certainly frustration, but also maybe some embarrassment that I'm not going to pick up the phone and call the Attorney General's office, because I'm mad that I did this, but I'm also embarrassed that this happened to me.
There's been some research over the years that suggests for every complaint a government unit receives, there's somewhere between 50 and 100 more of them out there.
Wow.
You know, I wanted to pick up on what you said about, or it's been talked about, how focusing on someone to keep it secret or, you know, being alone. The point is this: almost everyone who calls, I shouldn't say everyone, but quite a few people who call us, the act of reporting it helps them say, this can't be right. You know, and often, more often, the ones who are telling us are the ones who know it's a scam. It's the ones who don't talk about it. In fact, you know, for example, you know, I've got an agreement with my dad. He's getting up there in years. And he's mind sharp as ever. But I said, Dad, anytime you get something, give me a call and tell me about it. And the act of telling you sometimes says, that can't be right. Mm-hmm. And it's this notion that it's got to be kept secret is intense, because generally if you share something with another person, either you will figure it out or the other person or your family will say, that can't be right, Mom. No one's going to do that. And the con artist, the crook's, you know, ability to make some money evaporates the more you share it. They only win when they can convince you to keep it secret or keep it to yourself, and try to pressure you, you know, through fear, to hurry and get this done. You know, if you talk to your mom or dad or your children or a neighbor or someone you trust, you know, from church or a club or something, good results are going to happen, you know, and the crook's going to lose.
Yeah. And I think the other element that Brett touched on that's really important is the pressure element, right? They're going to make you want to complete that transaction in that phone call. And again, it's because if you get distance, you're going to start cycling through what's going on, and you're going to be able to start to pick apart whatever the scam is. Just as Brett said, you know, if you try to explain the scam to someone else, at some point in that explanation, you're going to go, wait a minute, this isn't right. Yep. And it's the same thing with that time pressure. If I, for example, owe money to my utility company or my phone company, and I tell them, you know what, you're right, I didn't pay my bill, I will get that check to you tomorrow. Or I will call back and I will be able to pay you tomorrow. They're going to say okay.
Yeah.
They're never going to put you in a position where it's like, if you don't pay it today, your phone is cut off. And that's just not how life works anymore. We've kind of evolved beyond that point. And I think that those two elements, right, that pressure element and that ability to explain, can really help folks out if they just take a little time.
I got a call a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, from someone pretending to be from the IRS that said that I owed $800 in taxes, and if I didn't pay right away, the agents were on their way right now to arrest me.
Which is not how it works.
Well, of course it's not how it works. And it's that pressure. Time is perhaps the best thing to prevent consumer fraud. The more time you have to think about it, to talk about it, to share it, the less likely you're going to get taken. And the crook knows that. These are we're saying it intentionally. These are criminals. These are not misunderstood people. These are criminals. Most of them overseas, so they're really hard to reach jurisdictionally. You know, they're calling from India. They're calling from the Caribbean. They're not calling from, you know, Canyon County or Ada County or something. They're overseas, so they're beyond reach, you know, fundamentally, and they are criminals. Many of them organized criminal organizations, not just an individual crook. These are sophisticated, technologically savvy criminals.
And it's easy money, because they can dial, they can use automation to dial.
Their computers can dial literally hundreds of thousands of phone numbers a day. They don't have to dial them. The computer program just dials it. Yeah. And then, you know, every so often, if the person picks up, they do their magic.
And the other thing about that is the call shows up as local.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's a call from India or somewhere else. It's local, and they're also exploiting a very other human characteristic. We have been conditioned to answer the phone. And we've been conditioned to answer the phone even if we don't recognize the number. And so one of the most important things that you can do to protect yourself is don't answer unknown numbers. If it's really important, they'll leave a message. And if it's not important, you don't need to answer it.
We've also said, if you find yourself speaking with somebody that you think there might be, you know, just one iota that they're a scammer, get off the phone. If it's important, if it's legit, call back. The other thing, Brett, I've heard you talk about in the past was we used to, as this gets at what Brian was saying, we've been raised in a society where the phone rings, you pick it up, and the assumption is that there's a good person who's being on the up and up on the other end of the line. These scammers and this technology and this proliferation of robocalls has sort of forced us to do a 180 on that and almost treat every single call. My putting my hands up in sort of a defensive boxer position, but not adversarial, but treat them with a heavy, heavy dose of skepticism right out of the gate instead of assuming that they're on the up and up.
The Brett Dalling family does not answer the phone if it's just a phone number that pops up. In fact, my phone enables me to use an option where it won't even ring. If it's a number that doesn't come from my contacts, it won't even ring. Now, it'll tell me, you know, and later I can say, I'm not calling that. But we just don't even answer. Brian's correct. The technology right now is favoring the criminal. They can make it look like it's a call from Ada County. It's not. Most assuredly, it is not. And you just don't know. Now, maybe there's some people in their businesses, they have to answer calls, you know, so you all have, you know, people have to decide what's best for them. But we just simply don't answer it. If it's important enough, they do leave a message. More often than not, they don't even leave a message, and, you know, we're the better off for it.
Rochelle?
Yes, and in addition to the phone calls, we talk about those so much because robocalls are such a huge problem, but I just want to also throw out there, again, these scammers are changing up their mode of, yeah, they're adapting. And I believe it was just last week, Attorney General Wasden did put out a consumer alert that scammers are now starting to jump into texting more often as well. So again, and it's like we all have that habit, you know, your phone buzzes, it dings, you get a text, you look at it. So, you know, in addition to not answering an actual phone call that comes through that you don't know, be wary of those texts as well.
That's a good point. Lee, why don't you answer this next one? Besides, we've talked a lot already about scams, and you had a front row seat to one actually happening that day in the Albertsons store. But when the phone rings, what other kind of things are they reaching out to the Consumer Protection Assistance, Consumer Protection Line to talk about?
Well, this time of year, door-to-door salesmen are a big thing, particularly in eastern Idaho. They are selling either Dish or DirecTV. They're doing cement projects. They're doing roofing. They get you to pay down $3,000, say. Before they do any work up front. And then they don't come back. And unfortunately, they went to your bank immediately and they cashed the check. Wow. So you're out that money.
What else? What other types of scams, fraud, consumer-related issues do you hear people talking about when you pick up the phone?
Things like Publishers Clearinghouse, all kinds of telephone solicitations, medical devices is really big right now. Jury duty, we were really slammed yesterday with jury duty.
And tell us
for
again
Ada
about
County.
The jury duty scam.
An officer will call from Ada County, which is makeup of a fake, and they will tell you that you've missed jury duty and there's a warrant out for your arrest. You can bypass the warrant if you give them $1,300. And sometimes they want you to bring it to the sheriff's department. Other times they want you to do it in iTunes cards.
Are you hearing from people who are being contacted by the people who are organizing this scam in the middle of the scam after they have been taken, or are they calling just to report it and say, hey, I heard? What's the
yesterday they were just calling and reporting.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
You didn't hear from anybody, for instance, yesterday saying I gave up
$1,300.
No. Okay.
So I just wanted to throw in another thing because I sit very close to Lee's desk, so I often hear her talking to the consumers who are calling in, and I know a couple of times in the last few days she has been fielding calls from consumers just asking about general consumer rights and responsibilities, and a couple of the calls that she's had have dealt with cooling off periods for purchases. Everybody has that, there's that myth that there's a 3-day cooling off period for all purchases, and that is not necessarily the case. So we often get calls from consumers on things like that as well.
Lee, you sort of have to be being on the front line and answering the phone. You never know what the topic is going to be that you're going to be asked to weigh in on. You sort of have to be a jack of all trades and have a really wide base of knowledge to do what you do.
Yes, I do.
It's okay not to be so humble. This is your opportunity to brag about yourself, okay?
No, yes, I do.
Otherwise, I'm going to make Brett do it for you.
Yeah. Yes, I do. But if I do have a question, I either go to Brett or one of the attorneys. Yesterday I had like 5 or 6 questions of things I did not know how to handle. So
well,
I gave
you can't know everything.
No,
there's
you
so
can't.
Many things that people can be calling about. I recognize that from my work with constituents. You need some help sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And our staff is good at that. So
I think it's helpful, Scott, for our listeners to know that neither Lee nor I can give legal advice to someone who calls. And so if you call saying, I need some legal advice, we're not going to be able to give that to you. By law, we're not allowed to represent individuals. Lee's very good, and the other specialists, about pointing out places to get information. But almost always, Lee will say, you know, that might be something you need to talk to a lawyer about. So, you know, if people want to say, I need to know what my rights are with regards to landlord tenants, Lee will be able to point to them to a booklet that sets forth what the laws provide. But they're not going to be able to say, this is what you should do, because, you know, we're not lawyers for individuals. But we do have a reservoir of information to tell people, you know, where to go so they can make an informed decision.
Brett, you have a large staff, and you have, you know, numerous attorneys on staff who are litigating things like tobacco-related litigation ongoing, doing investigations regarding opioids and whatnot. Talk about the important role that these particular staff members play, not just in your Consumer Protection Division, but as a whole in the Office of the Attorney General.
Well, it's crucial. I think Lee and the specialists probably talk to more Idahoans than anyone else in the Office of the Attorney General. And so to some degree, people of the state are forming their opinion about the Attorney General, not because what Brett DeLange's doing in the courtroom, but what their interaction with our specialists and with Lee. You know, every day it's scores of telephone calls, and all over the state, seeking some, sharing a story, asking for some help with understanding something. And so it's crucial. I hope it doesn't sound too cliche. I've said this before. I think, us lawyers, we're going to win our battles in the courtroom, but we will win the war on consumer fraud with informed citizens protecting themselves. And they get a little bit better informed because of the work that the specialists and Lee do.
Lee, I'll have you turn the microphone back towards you. Just in a given day, I don't know if you keep track, but can you give me an idea of how many people you talk to, how many calls you take?
Yesterday, I think I had 40 calls.
40 calls.
So wow. Several hundred a week.
A week.
Yeah.
That's very, very impressive. Mm-hmm.
And this won't be just Lee. And during the day, there'll be other specialists besides Lee. So it's more than 40 total.
So safe to say dozens and maybe even a couple of hundred
easily.
Per yep. day. That's substantial. Brett, you have the new, the latest consumer protection report. We'll talk about sort of, overall statistics in terms of what people want to talk about when the phone rings and ranking the issues that they have. But before we move on to that part of our discussion today, I want to ask both of you, Rochelle and Lee, about the satisfaction that you get. You work in a job that inherently it may be too late to help some people, but you are going to be able to help some people. Do you get satisfaction from that help that you're able to provide on a daily basis?
Oh, absolutely. I think I was surprised because obviously I have not been with the office as long as Lee or Brett. I was very surprised by how prevalent scams are out in the community. Every time I tell someone, where I'm working now and what I'm doing, almost everybody shares a story with me of a friend, a family member, a neighbor who's been scammed. And so being able to get that word out to the public and try to prevent people from becoming victims is great, because none of us have money to lose. Idahoans last year reported losses of, I think it was $7.3 million to scammers, to the FTC.
And that's just what we know of.
And that's just what we know of. So if we can prevent that from happening, it's gold.
Lee, why do you do what you do?
Oh, I love my job. And I guess the most important thing is helping people.
Well, you do a great job of it.
Thank you.
Per Brett's point that you're talking to more Idahoans than any other representative of the Office of the Attorney General. I just want to let you know, as the PIO, and I'm very, very comfortable with you being the voice of our organization.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
that. To most Idahoans. I don't think we could do a better job than put you on the front line.
Well, I certainly do love the job.
One of the things I want to talk about with you, Rochelle, you, in your role in the Office of the Attorney General, you have sort of taken a lead on outreach. Talk about some of the opportunities that the Consumer Protection Division provides to groups in the community so we can go hit the road and take our message, not in a podcast and not in a one-on-one in the office in the form of a phone call, but to bigger groups.
So, yes, we are endeavoring to get out into the community more. We do presentations to apartment complexes of seniors, or we'll go to, like, Smart Women, Smart Money. We've got a booth coming up there just to get ourselves out into the community. We also partner with other organizations on consumer fraud prevention and education. We're members of the Idaho Scam Jam Alliance, and that group includes our office, AARP, the Better Business Bureau, Idaho Department of Finance, and a number of other groups. And we do one-day scam jams. It's a one-day conference to inform consumers about fraud and identity theft, and we'll be doing three of those this year, one in May in the Wood River Valley area, I'm sorry, April in the Wood River Valley, May in Southeast Idaho, and in Northern Idaho in the fall. We don't have our dates set yet, but once we do, those will be on the Scam Jam website. And yeah, we just want to get the word out. Like Brett said, if we can educate the public, hopefully we can prevent people from becoming victims.
And if somebody hears that message in our podcast and says, boy, I've got a group of consumers I would like to get Rochelle in front of, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call our office, or we now have an online request a presentation form. So if they go to ag.idaho.gov, up on the right, there's a pull-down menu, and they can request a presentation. That's also where consumers, if they're having a problem with a business, can file a complaint there as well.
There's a lot of resources under consumer protection on the website. Let's shift gears before we wrap up today. Brett, you have a copy of the brand new 2019 annual report, and on one of the pages near the end of that, it details the complaint categories and ranks them based on the amount of volume of calls and other contacts that we've had from constituents. What in 2019 did you hear from people the most from on?
Well, the number one complaint was motor vehicles. That's held true for pretty much the last number of years.
And what is that? What's a typical motor vehicle complaint, if there is one?
Typical one is I was told something about the vehicle that, you know, for sale that wasn't true. And sometimes there's misunderstandings. Sometimes there was a misrepresentation, and or the advertisements were misleading in a way, either in the disclosures of the payment terms or things like that.
So it's not just private party to private party. This involves dealerships.
These are probably more often than not dealerships.
Oh, okay. Okay. What else is on the list?
Well, number two is something that increased construction and contractors. You know, contractors promising to do something by a date or promising a certain level of skill or expertise and then it, you know, allegedly not being correct. And we're up to 86 of those. That's the highest we've ever had with regards to contractors in construction. Landlord tenants is always in the top three. More often than not, it's the tenants complaining that the landlord has taken their security deposit inappropriately or charging them for things that are wear and tear or things like that.
How about the last two of the top five? What's four and five on there?
Well, four is a tie.
Okay.
Healthcare and cellular, you know, telephone services were both tied for fourth. That's about the same as year to year. We get about the same number of complaints. You know, telephones, I was misrepresented the price or the terms or the, you know, the termination fees, these sorts of things that was going on. In healthcare, it's, you know, I don't understand what the doctor's charging or the hospital. You know, I'm seeing things that I didn't understand I'd be charged for, those sorts of complaints.
Do you have a total number of contacts that the office had with consumers who called in or emailed in?
We do. Last year, we had 13,847 consumer contacts to the office.
So over 1,000 a month.
Yeah, over 1,000. And it ebbs and flows a little bit.
Is there a busy season? I was going to ask.
We're going into the busy season with taxes.
Okay.
So.
And you mentioned door-to-door earlier. I suppose that's tied to an improvement in the weather. You see more knocks on the door and more complaints about the people doing the knocking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, some types of problems, you know, generally the guys who are going to try to do your roof or repave your driveway, they're probably in August, September, you know, when the sun's out. You know, sometimes some of the charitable donation problems are around the holiday season. IRS will probably fire up here because tax season's coming on. And so we generally see a trend like that.
Okay. Is there anything else anybody would like to add before we get to closing comments, Rochelle?
I just wanted to mention the taxes. Specifically, when I was out in the community a couple weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, ways to prevent identity theft, and one of them, they recommend you file your taxes early, because that way if somebody has stolen your identity, they can't file and steal your refund.
Okay.
And one of the women in that presentation shared that happened to her daughter twice. So if you can file your taxes early, go for it.
Rochelle, while you have the microphone, why don't we ask for just anything in the consumer protection realm? You have an audience now. What's your number one piece of advice?
Oh, there's so much, but I do want to springboard off what Brett said about motor vehicle complaints. One thing I would love everybody to do if they're buying a used car is to get it checked by an independent mechanic before you buy it, because once you sign that contract, you may be stuck. So we just get so many of those complaints, and I think some of that could be avoided if they took it to a mechanic. I had to take 3 to my my mechanic before he approved the final car.
So I'm just curious, what did that, $100 each time, $150?
At the time, I think he was charging me $40 each time, and he actually let me, he gave me a free one of those because I had taken so many to him.
But that's a pretty small amount of money when you factor it against the overall price of a car to have that much peace of mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lee, how about you? You deal with a lot of people on a daily basis who encounter a lot of different problems in regards to consumer protection. What would be your number one piece of advice to somebody listening today?
Well, I'd like to talk about door-to-door salesmen.
Okay.
If you don't know who is on the other side of the door, do not open the door. Do not let strangers into your house and let them sit there for 2 or 3 hours talking to you. And never, ever give money up front.
Okay, that's great advice. Brett, some parting wisdom you'd like to add?
I urge people to go to our website. We have a toll-free number throughout the entire state. So whether you're Sandpoint to Soda Springs in between, there's a toll-free number you can call us. It's 800-432-3545. I think we mentioned the website, ag.idaho.gov. There's a consumer protection link on it, and there's a wealth of information to help people, and that you can look at your, it's all free. Everything is free to download or to utilize, and urge people to avail themselves of these resources. This is, there's that, is it an African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child? Well, in some ways it takes a village to help each other with consumer fraud, and there's different parts for all of us to play.
Brian?
I would just reinforce, remember, you don't have to answer the phone if you don't recognize the number. If it's important, they will leave a message. The government generally does not transact business by telephone calls. And if you think about it logically, the government has to document pretty much everything that they do. And the best way to document it is through a letter sent by U.S. mail. And so as you go into tax season, if the IRS has a problem with your tax return, they will let you know, and it will be by mail. They're not going to call you up and demand payment over the phone. Never, ever pay the IRS over the phone unless you've got a letter and you initiated the call to the IRS. And with that, I mean, I think we've now got a pretty good chance of getting this podcast out before the Iowa caucus results.
You know, and I'll follow up one of the Indian telemarketing companies spoofed an IRS number. So when your phone came up, it said IRS, and you're thinking, holy cow, it is the IRS this time. It's not. The IRS will not call you about a tax problem. So whether it says IRS or not, do not take the call. Just disconnect.
And if I can add to that, having had to call the IRS in the past, based on the amount of time it took for me to get to a live person, they're not calling anybody.
No, they are not.
Well, on that note, Lee Post, Rochelle Littow, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for all the good work that you do for Idahoans, and thank you from the central office for all the good work that you do for the Office of the Attorney General. We appreciate you being on the podcast. So
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Brett DeLange is the Consumer Protection Division Chief. Brett, thanks again for being here.
It's my honor. Thank you.
And Brian Kane, Assistant Chief Deputy and co-host of the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and that's going to wrap up episode 14 of Counsel for the State. If you're interested in learning even more about the office's Consumer Protection Division, again, that website, ag.idaho.gov. And if you have not heard our other 13 podcasts, you can check those out at the AG's website. You'll also find those through iTunes or Spotify. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll join us again for our next episode.